A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
This episode is brought to you by the Center for Addiction and Mental Health, CAMH. It's never an easy call with so many problems in the world to know where to direct the money that you donate when you want to help out in this world. But what I can tell you is that when you donate to CAMH, you're saving lives. We know about the opioid crisis. We know about the mental health crisis. They are doing the work. Help change mental health care forever. Your support will help CAMH build a future where no one is left behind. Donate at CAMH.ca/CanadaLand to help us treat addiction and build hope. Hey, I need you to pay close attention to this message. It is not an ad. This is about Canada Land, and this is about you. You need to know that the news crisis is about to get a lot worse. You've heard about the layoffs. We're about to have news closures, and it's very likely that we're going to be seeing the defunding of the CBC. Where are you going to get your information from? What can you do about this? You can support Canada Land. We need you to. And so for this month and this month only, you can become a Canada Land supporter and get everything our supporters get for just $2 a month. That is an almost 80% discount. The clock is ticking on this. It disappears at the end of the month, and then we will not offer it. We need your support. We need to keep news coverage alive in Canada. Go right now to canadaland.com/join. And thank you.
This episode is brought to you by Squarespace. Squarespace is the easiest way to create a beautiful website, blog, or online store for you and your ideas. Squarespace features an elegant interface, beautiful templates, and incredible 24/7 customer support. Try Squarespace at squarespace.com and enter the offer code CanadaLand at checkout to get 10% off. Squarespace, build it beautiful. The most hated man in Canadian music, according to the CBC anyhow, is a punk rock bass player, former adjunct professor of sociology and media studies, and record label owner named Paul Lawton. Why is he the most hated man in Canadian music? It's because of his Tumblr, a blog called Slagging Off, where he slagged off Factor. Factor is where you go for a grant if you are a Canadian musician. The Foundation for Assisting Canadian Talent on Recordings gets about $20 million a year directly from the government, from the Ministry of Heritage, and from radio stations who have to give Factor money. The CRTC makes them. And they are supposed to disperse that in order to, here's their mandate, to support the independent Canadian music industry. What Paul Lawton argued on his blog is that Factor has strayed from that mandate, that they are in fact business class individuals who have set themselves up to live off the profits of middle-of-the-road indie rock. Now that Paul Lawton blog post about Factor, which is probably the most widely shared blog post amongst the Canadian music scene that ever was, it was not just an opinionated screed against Factor. Paul Lawton actually dove deep into the data, the funding information, and Factor doesn't really make it that easy to do so. They're not incredibly transparent. But he went into their annual reports and he pulled information and he compiled it and he kind of proved his argument. What he was able to illustrate using numbers, using the amount of money that Factor has put out, is that Factor's grants heavily favor a handful of labels and artists. The trend that he was able to illustrate was that a certain genre of music is overwhelmingly supported, indie rock, and a certain proximity. Most of the top 10 labels to get large amounts of money from Factor over a 10-year period were located within 15 kilometers of Factor's downtown Toronto headquarters. So this music fund, which exists for anybody to tap, was supporting certain well-established artists incredibly well. Bands including Metric and The Trues had received over $500,000 throughout the years. Other bands like Stars were getting six-figure sums. labels like Arts and Crafts were very represented, not only in the amount of money they were receiving from Factor, but in the fact that they actually were part of Factor, sitting on juries, adjudicating what other artists should get money. What Paul Lawton revealed is a caste system within Factor. And the way it works is, if you are among this elite club of bands and labels, what Paul Lawton calls well-connected insiders, then your grant application gets rubber-stamped. You get big checks automatically. Nobody even listens to your music. But if you're not in that club, if you are among the thousands of other bands in Canada, then you're fighting it out with all of the thousands of bands in Canada for much smaller checks. Who makes the decisions about whether you get it or not? A jury of those well-connected insiders. When this controversy first broke out, Paul Lawton was met with a lot of pushback from the music industry and from Factor, of course. Duncan McKee, the president of Factor, would not sit in the same room as Paul Lawton. He wouldn't debate him directly. And he described Paul Lawton's critique as hearsay. Duncan McKee of Factor, by the way, has agreed to be interviewed by me for a subsequent episode. But today, in just a moment, I will be talking to Paul Lawton. Wait for it. This episode of Canada Land is brought to you by Ravi Sidhu, Aris Dajigian, Robin Burlingham, Nestor Gollitz, Lisa Levac, Damien Panayi, Trevor, Susan Harris, and Scott Stratton. Scott, why did you decide to be awesome?
Because the powers that be need to be held accountable. Not listening to Canada Land would be un-Canadian. I listen every single episode.
This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's amazing the things that we tell ourselves to talk ourselves out of getting help. Anybody who's actually gotten help knows that the process of getting things off your chest, of taking your stressors, your problems, and just like not letting them be bottled up, working through just conveying them to somebody, half of the battle is just doing that. You unburden yourself. And you know what? If you have a real mental health professional, no, they don't have magic bullets or magic words that make it all go away. But often they can help you see things a little bit differently and guide you to strategies or tools or to a new perspective that actually does help. As the largest online therapy provider in the world, BetterHelp can provide access to mental health professionals with a wide variety of expertise in mental health. Because you listen to this podcast, you get 10% off of your first month at betterhelp.com/CanadaLand. That's betterhelp.com/CanadaLand. This episode is brought to you by Douglas, a mattress trusted by more than 200,000 Canadians from coast to coast to coast. Trust is important. There are a lot of mattress lies out there, a lot of mattress liars. And I didn't intend the pun, but it occurred to me that there is one as I was saying those words. Listen, I am not lying to you. I have experienced the Douglas mattress. It is an exceptional mattress at a surprisingly affordable price point. It is a mattress that sleeps cool, doesn't have that weird thing in the summer where the mattress gets like an oven. It's a very good product. It's delivered to your house in a box. You don't have to go to a big mattress store. It is a medium firm mattress, which is what Canadians prefer, and it comes with a 365-night trial and a 20-year warranty. What more can I tell you? Douglas is giving our listeners a free sleep bundle with each mattress purchase. Get the sheets, pillows, mattress, and pillow protectors free with your Douglas purchase today. Visit douglas.ca/CanadaLand to claim this offer.
This episode is also brought to you by Squarespace, who have basically solved the problem of building a website on the internet. Squarespace lets anyone make a simple, powerful, beautiful website in minutes. They have 24/7 support via live chat and email, and it starts at $8 a month. You get a free domain if you buy Squarespace for a year, and what you get is responsive design. You build your website once, it works on tablets or phones, wherever. You get a free online store, e-commerce with every website, and you get access to a huge library of pre-designed cover pages. You just plug in your own text and images, and your website will look fantastic. Go check it out at squarespace.com. Start a trial today. You don't have to give them your credit card, and you can build your website immediately. When you do decide to sign up for Squarespace, and I'm pretty sure if you try it out, you will decide to do that, make sure to use the offer code CanadaLand. You'll get 10% off your first purchase, and you'll be showing your support for this show. Squarespace, build it beautiful. All right, the most hated man in the Canadian music industry.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that? What's the, is that fair?
In a certain segment of the Canadian music industry, it's absolutely fair.
Yeah.
I hesitated doing this because, you know, there was a point last year where I was unemployed and I was searching for a day job. And on two occasions, I was told, you're our best candidate, but we Googled you. And the most hated man in Canadian music comes up. Who's this guy? He's going to come in. He's going to muckrack. He's going to cause problems for us. You know, and I actually remember the man who hired me, God bless him, finished the interview. And he said to me, I Googled your name. I read your blog. And I was like, okay, well, that's nice knowing you. You know, this is done, right? And he took a chance. It's this weird thing where if you're the one out on a limb saying this stuff, and I'm out on a limb because I, in my mind, I have nothing left to lose and a lot to gain by talking about the system, which I think could be better and run differently. And when you're the one standing up and you don't have a lot of other people who I know agree with me out of fear of, you know, it's, I don't want to be blacklisted. I want to get, you're saying this about this. I can't back you on that because I have a record coming out and I got to, you know, and it's the same in any industry where you're the one standing up going, no, this isn't right. This is corrupt. No one wants to be left out. There's a lot of money on the table. I hesitate coming and talking about this even right now because it's like, okay, so it's starting to die down and nothing really happened in the last 6 months has changed in any meaningful way. It's still broken and there's no way for me to benefit anymore. So there's, I guess there's nothing.
So CBC Day 6, Brent Bamberry asked you on the show, he wanted you to debate the president of Thatcher, Duncan McKee. What happened there?
He wouldn't sit in the room with me. Uh-huh. So they interviewed me.
Yeah.
And then he got to hear that interview and respond to me asynchronously.
Uh-huh.
And then he was able to kind of like, oh, no, that's wrong. Huh. And so the result of that was that I was done talking about this. Like, I'm not going to go on the record anymore.
Because you were attacked as this is just sour grapes from a guy who didn't get any government money.
So the reason why Paul's mad at us is because his band doesn't merit getting that money.
This is the catch 22.
And this is the catch 22.
It's the catch 22 of a lot of Canada Land stuff is that the only people willing to criticize the system are those who aren't benefiting from it. But those who aren't benefiting from it can easily be dismissed as sour grapes, bitter people.
Exactly.
And if they only were good enough to get to benefit from it, then they wouldn't be slagging it off.
Well, and here's the thing too, is that I have benefited from it.
Uh-huh.
My bands have received funding.
Yeah.
After all that stuff happened was the year that I got the most amount of funding.
Do you think that was, like, intentional to show that
I don't think so.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so I have this band, Ketamines, at the time. We got Pitchfork Buzz and
Pitchfork, which is an influential music blog.
And this pains me to say this. It's still the one influential music thing.
Right.
You can have your stuff on Exclaim, and you can have your stuff on Stereo Gum and anything else, but it's a good review on Pitchfork.
Yeah.
And the Pitchfork crew talking about you, which will make or break you.
What does that mean?
So if you get a low mark on Pitchfork, let's say you get 8 and above is you're playing every festival in the world.
What did you get?
We got a 7, which is huge. We're like, oh, so, because we're at this point, we're in Lethbridge. We're nobodies, right? So 7, all of a sudden, people are knocking at our door.
All right, so you were doing all right when you decided to take up arms.
That's right.
Okay.
And then we'd been touring. We toured most of 2012.
Yeah.
And had great shows, had every good festival, all the good stuff that happens.
Let's say I'm a young musician.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure my stuff can stand up as, next to anyone else's. I think that I could, you know, if I only had a chance, if I had a leg up, I could really connect with an audience. I want to break into the industry.
Yeah.
And I learned that there are government programs and other programs to do just that, to help me get started.
Right.
So what do I do?
You want to know how to get to level 2. So level 1 is every musician in Canada can be level 1, which means that you're in their system. You can apply for a limited number of grants, such as demo grants, which is like $1,500.
You don't have to have a label to be level 1.
No, anybody can be level 1.
You don't have to have sold any records. You don't have, like, you just sign up. I could say I'm a musician and I could be level 1 this afternoon.
You put in some any press you've got, any radio charting, campus community, yada, yada, and then you get rated by the factor system, which is an algorithm. More or less.
There's not humans listening to my music.
They don't care. It doesn't matter what the music is.
This is automated.
And there's certain genres of music. So if you're a classical musician or if you're a heavy metal musician or a hip-hop musician, you're getting kind of
weighted against other people in your genre.
And this is where, what, like the vast majority of bands probably exist as level ones, yes?
Yeah, so the system is set up this way. So level one, everybody. Level two is capped at 200 artists.
I'm in level one.
Yeah.
Anybody can be in level one. Mm-hmm. I'm just basically ticking off boxes, that, and then the algorithm is going to place me based on how much press I've gotten, this, that, and the other thing.
Correct.
And then I'm fighting with the largest number of people possible. That's for right. The smallest grants.
Between 2 and 8% of their entire grant money that's going out the door.
So it's the smallest slice of the pie. And going to
the largest number of musicians.
Right. They give the most grants at that level.
That's right.
So there I'm looking at like what, like a couple $1,000 to cut a demo?
$1,500.
$1,500.
You know, for one song, which is reasonable. Like that's, you can go to a decent homemade studio and it allows you to probably spend a little bit of money on mastering and all these other things.
Cool, no, beggars can't be choosers, right? I mean, if you are coming in with no track record and saying, I want some money to cut a demo, $1,500 could be a big deal to you. Right. But what I'm curious about is it just a computer choosing winners or does some human listen to my song?
In order to get that grant, it's juried.
Uh-huh.
So Factor will talk very proudly about the number of jury members they have from across Canada. Anybody can be on the jury.
Anybody? Like the people I've known who've done it have been like writers or musicians.
That's right.
I guess some people would say that's how it should be. Arts grants, you know, government money for arts shouldn't be administered by bureaucrats. It should be distributed by artists.
That's correct.
But of course, then you get into the problem of artists giving money to, you know, if not necessarily the friends that they know,
right,
then the genres that they are themselves sympathetic to, which might be the genre that they are practicing. So then you get to level two. How do you get to level two?
In order to get to level two, I've got to sell 11,000 records, median number. I have to have a median average of $44,000 of tour revenue.
$44,000?
Yes. $1,165 per show.
And how many record sales to get to level two?
11,000.
11,000 albums.
That's the medium. Yeah.
People aren't selling a lot of albums these days.
This is a streaming world. How does selling physical copies through a Factor-recognized distributor makes sense anymore? All I know are musicians.
Yeah.
That's everyone in my whole social circle are all musicians. I don't know personally a single artist who are hitting those numbers.
Yeah.
You're talking about most working independent musicians who are doing very well.
You're kind of already
out at about 5,000 physical sales.
So what do you get if you're level two?
So your level two means that you can apply for things like tour funding, marketing. The one kind of thing that is going to help most Canadian musicians the most is tour funding. And it's the one thing that most Canadian musicians want.
Because these days you're not making money off album sales anyhow.
You're not making any money off of album sales.
But you can still make money on the road.
You can make money on the road. Kind of.
Yeah.
So if you get to that point, it's basically how they've set it up is you don't get funding until you don't need it.
Yeah.
And that's it.
What are the size of those grants, level two?
So you can apply for a jury sound recording. You get $20,000 to cut a record or whatever. If you can prove that you're going on tour by showing them, you know, emails with booking agents and all these other kind of myriad of ways to prove that you've been on the road. That year we got about $16,000 in tour funding, which is amazing for us.
Yeah.
But if you think about it, my band is a five piece.
Right.
And the height of our Canadian success where we're going to play, you know, the kind of mid-sized venues in Canada and we're pulling decent numbers and we're averaging $600 a show.
Yeah.
At the end of that year where we each got Factor money, each of us got about $2,000.
Yeah.
It seems like a lot of money, $16,000, this punk band to go on the road.
No, I can imagine the argument from their point of view, though, which is like, look, music is the kind of thing where there's an endless supply of people who want to do it.
And
if you were just giving money to people, even good people, even people who are making decent music, you would run out of whatever amount of money you had to spend.
That's right.
So, you know, let's make some distinctions here based on like you found an audience. Our jury that we've carefully selected likes your stuff and you're doing well. And it's tough out there. So we're going to help you. We're going to give you what we can.
Yeah.
Maybe a band that otherwise would have broken up will have that breakthrough and we will be playing that role of keeping you in the game at level two.
That's right.
Right. So that's okay.
Absolutely. It's great. And I've been very clear from day one that I've never been or I wasn't
against music granting.
Yeah. So what percentage of their total pie goes to level two bands?
They used to be able to see every quarter they'd put out a list of everybody who they've given money to. So when I first did my Trouble with Factor, critique, it was very easy for me to pull numbers.
You're saying they've become less transparent? They're not offering that
they've
anymore?
They've made a new website and they've basically disabled the ability to search. Like, you can search, kind of.
Oh, someone's got to scrape this data.
And that's just it. And the reason why I haven't been as vocal about it is it's harder to prove because it's not transparent. It seems transparent.
They did that after your first piece.
They did.
Yeah.
Because they changed their website. They were calling it Factor 2.0.
Yeah.
Another kind of problem with critiquing the system is it's a moving target.
Let's talk about level three, because this is the one that actually really caught my eye.
Level three is basically blank check.
Yeah.
You have a grant supervisor who basically, if it seems legit, like, oh yeah, this is like a music video, yeah, okay. You have there's a certain pool of money that goes into marketing and tour funding or whatever. So it's capped at 100 musicians. So this is your metrics, your The Trues, your Matt Goods, like the upper echelon.
You're an established enough, you've got a label, you've got a distributor at this point.
Well, so that's a different story though, because if you are a level three label, you can fund your level one band.
Wait, how a label gets to be? Wait,
so they have two systems.
A label applies to be level?
Record labels in Canada go through the same system. So you go in as a record label in Canada, you're someone putting out music.
Okay.
You've crossed certain thresholds.
Yeah, as a label.
A label.
You've hit criteria based on concert ticket sales that have to be a certain kind of sale. They got to be a sale through a distributor. So what does that leave out if it's a sale through a distributor?
It leaves out you selling your records at gigs.
Yeah.
So basically it has to be SoundScan recognized. I can sell records at my merch table, which is where if I'm Ketamines, who I was, 90% of the records we sold were through merch table.
At your shows.
Through, we're driving to Saskatoon and we're dropping off records at the local record store and we're hustling the DIY style.
Yeah.
I can catch it if I have a membership to SoundScan, which is for an independent musician.
Yeah.
It's like $1,000 a year or something. And I can fax in a sales report for every day. So I sell a number of records at my merch table.
Yeah.
I can say I sold 200 records today and I get the bar manager to sign off on it. And I fax it into SoundScan.
They don't take email? Do you have to fax it in?
You have to fax it in.
And the bar manager.
So the bar manager signs off. But the bar manager, I've played many shows in my life. I don't think I've ever met a bar manager. If I have, it's
very
rare.
No, he's there counting your sales. He wants to know
because
he's a man of integrity and wants to report this accurately to SoundScan. We're making fun, but they have to do it somehow. They have to count it somehow.
That's right.
So you get in as a band. You've hit all these posts. You get
That's
in
right.
as a label. You've hit all these posts. What do you get? You say it's a blank check. What does that mean?
So a blank check means that I put together a budget for marketing. That top echelon, it's if there's caps, and again, the caps change. So you can get this much money per year to do a video, to do tour support, to do production support, to do all of the things that you would do if you were a big band. Because the bigger you get, the more kind of people you have propping you up, and everybody's got to get paid. So you put in budgets at the top of this, and if it's legitimate, then you will get that money. So I'm not suggesting that there's fraud happening necessarily. I'm saying that you are doing this stuff and you'll get that money.
I don't think anything you've written in your critiques has sort of alleged fraud. What you described was a crony system.
Exactly.
Yeah. And the part that really caught my eye, and I think a lot of other people's, is that you actually got into the data. It was kind of shocking when you showed that bands like The Trues and Metric and their lead singer's solo project, Emily Haynes, and a handful of others were getting like upwards of $500,000.
Right.
Over the course of the 10 years that you were looking at. Like you say, these are not the acts that necessarily need it. If anybody has, gotten that leg up that funding should exist to provide,
right.
it would be a band like Metric that succeeded. But the part that really grabbed me was you documented how close the offices of these labels were
right.
to the Factor offices.
Right.
And they were all like 15, 16 kilometers away
That's
from Factor's
office. In the top 10.
Yeah.
The companies that are pushing this product are all in the same sphere, and it's...
Let's describe this sphere. And there are some problems here that cross over because you've got like... the indie label Arts and Crafts, one of the top labels receiving the most amount of money.
Probably the top label.
And they're involved with Factor itself, are they not?
Jeffrey Remedios is the chair of the board of Factor.
Uh-huh. And he's not the only one, right? Like, people who are on the juries are also people who hope to get Factor grants and have gotten Factor grants.
Correct.
I think it's worth it to try to figure out what's wrong with this and how it could be fixed and how it could be better. Mm-hmm. And yet, I also feel like what we're describing is the same situation over again that That's always right. happens. Like, there isn't any, like, j'accuse. Like, no one's getting stinking rich off of this stuff. I don't think anyone's getting super rich off of it. I think some people have probably figured out how to game the system.
Yes.
I think that it started with the best of intentions.
Absolutely.
I think you can't blame people
yeah.
for favoring the music that they themselves play or that they themselves release. And people tend to have invisible biases of like, well, yeah, he's my friend. I like his music, but maybe he's my friend because I like his music, or maybe we're like in the same band, like that kind of stuff. People can always make the argument that is an organic kind of thing that happened. I think you get so far from your original intention, which is, what are we trying to do here?
Correct.
If what all of these subsidies are trying to accomplish is to create an industry yes. and put Canadian content in people's minds and on the air, it's a total success. And the Canadian music, the CanCon scheme, is cited by the film and TV industry as like, that's what we should aspire to, because they have launched.
Right.
They continue to launch new bands all the time that become popular bands. So getting that into the culture so we're not inundated with American stuff has worked. But
kind of. It's kind of worked.
Yeah.
And my counterpoint to okay. that would be, so the North by Northeast Festival, which is coming up.
Yeah.
If you look at the headliners,
yeah,
how many of those headliners are Canadian? Now, there's a lot of Canadian bands playing, and I'm not arguing that North by Northeast doesn't privilege or showcase Canadian talent. You know, and a lot of Canadian music is getting bigger and bigger. My favorite example is Mac DeMarco, who I knew as a kid in Edmonton, and now he's super famous in the U.S., was cut out from granting until he was getting huge buzz south of the border.
Yeah.
And over again, it's the same, maybe the same system as where once you start getting recognized south of the border, then we'll start yeah. throwing this money at it.
Point there. Like, this is the one that I think, correct me if this is wrong, but I got the sense, and I've heard it said elsewhere, that Arcade Fire couldn't get anything going in Canada.
Until, yeah.
And then KCRW absolutely. In LA fell in love with them, and they started to get play in the States. And right. then we were falling over ourselves to yeah. give them every grant.
They get the Pitchfork Best New Music.
Yeah.
Because they're frequently cited as the band that Pitchfork made.
Yeah.
So the height of Pitchfork was them giving the Arcade Fire to the world.
Well, this is my second point, which is, like, if arts funding is about uh-huh. finding the best person out there doing the most innovative thing
yeah.
and helping them. If you look at the great artists in history, did all the other artists who preceded them love them?
Right.
They're usually like derided and despised sure. by, you know, art works in revolutions.
Sure.
And I don't know that that's something that funding can even address, you know?
I think you're wrong about that. I think you're right to say that challenging music isn't always for the people, and that the people generally won't, you know, en masse glom onto things that are challenging. And, you know, I've seen that through my entire career in music. But there's so much money being thrown at a relatively small number of people. Now, Factor will argue that point. But when you start to look at the big labels, their sub-labels, their full-time grant writers who are employed by all of the labels. If you're yeah. a big label in Canada and your top position is a grant writer. If you're a big festival in Canada, your top most important person is the grant writer.
By what do you mean? They get paid the most, or they're like—
It's who keeps them alive.
Yeah.
If we were to take away Factor tomorrow, which I think we should, like just tear it all down, get rid of it.
Yeah.
And then let's see, give it a year and see who's left standing. The whole thing crumbles.
The whole thing crumbles, meaning all the labels that—
The big labels who are—
Those labels are so dependent on Factor money that's what keeps them in business.
I would say entirely dependent.
Arts and Crafts puts out lots of great music, you know?
Sure.
And there was maybe a time when they were more relevant than they are now, when they were about connecting with an audience and they were on the vanguard of a certain kind of music. But when you're getting a lot of your financing— Mm-hmm. from a government agency or, you know, whatever,
right.
An agency that's spending government money, and that's dependable money, and is, you know,
right.
then that becomes what you're there to do.
That becomes your sole reason for existing. And that's why you see those big labels starting sub-labels. You have the system where the bands and labels at the top of the funding pyramid were the bands and labels that were successful before the music industry was decimated by digital sharing. So you're able to kind of keep it going.
Oh, your grandfather. You mean the once you get to level three, you're level three for life? Is that?
My understanding of it is at this point in time now, yes.
Uh-huh.
But that I have heard through friends who are friends of people who work at big labels who were grandfathered in, who haven't had a hit in a while, that it's starting to be, you know, time's up. And good.
You hear this in Canadian funding a lot. It's like, well, you've had your turn.
You've had your turn.
Now it's someone else's turn.
But that turn has lasted for some of these decade or more of just at the trough. You're able to just keep getting money. And then the more money you have, the more chances at bat you have to put out more stuff.
Like, nobody got into this with an idea of, like, this is where the big bucks are at. I'm going to become three label, and then I'm going to bilk the system for 10 years until they catch up with me, and then I'm out of work. People get into music because they love music.
Absolutely.
Right? And the people who got into that level three status, some of them anyhow, really were probably really innovative and wonderful for their time, but you get soft and lazy when the money.
We used to, in the tour van, we had Sirius, and we'd play this game where we put on Radio 3, and it would be, how long can you stand this? And the person who presses stop loses. So you have to endure.
Yeah.
And it's a very specific sound with very specific production values. I'm saying this as someone who genuinely actually likes indie rock.
Yeah.
Like, my all-time favorite band is Guided by Voices. It's an indie rock as it comes. I mean, I play in kind of pseudo indie, like.
But that's before indie rock became an easy listening format.
That's correct. So you have this, like, adult alternative. Yeah. You know, you could play most of the bands at the top echelon of the Canadian funding system to your mom, and mom would be down.
Yeah.
She's like into it. Oh, I like this one. You know, a lot of people in my office listen to that kind of the mainstream indie stuff as it's the new kind of mainstream pop. There's nothing weird about it. There's nothing challenging about it. And I'm not saying that it's bad, because I want to avoid the subjective, as you say, because I think it actually takes away from any of these critiques, because you can look at me, well, this guy just hates this kind of music. Which I absolutely don't.
Yeah.
I listen to everything.
Yeah.
And I listen to everything that's up and coming in the Canadian music. I'm interested in it. And I'm always hoping to be challenged by something. I'm hoping to be intellectually stimulated by some of this music. And frequently I'm disappointed.
So should we have this stuff at all?
No, is the answer. In its current state, absolutely not. I think it's what you describe is absolutely true, where you get a bunch of people who have benefited greatly, and they get to this point where they become reliant on it, and everything gets soft and flabby, you know. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that's good for music. And my whole career has been surrounded by musicians who don't even know that this world exists.
I think the real problem that you've put your finger on is it creates a sick system. And if you're like, you know, if you're entering into it and you see, like, I'm trying to get a leg up, and it's not fair that this other band gets rubber stamped. It's not fair. Right.
I mean, I personally, as a musician, have made the decision I will no longer play North by Northeast. You know,
what's wrong with North by Northeast? What's wrong with Canadian Music Week?
There's different reasons. I have different problems with both of them. I find Canadian Music Week to be more or less exploitative of musicians. I met this randomly, this musician who flew in from Calgary to play his first show ever at Canadian Music Week, because he applied and they rubber stamped him in, and he got a showcase at 2 a.m. somewhere north of Bloor on a Saturday night, the last day of the festival, and sold him in on all these conference packages. And it's like, you're going to come and learn about the way we do it in the big city. And, you know, them bragging about, you know, we have 1,000 bands at this thing. And that seems great. Like, that's a lot of music. And I love music. So 1,000 bands, that's got to be amazing, right? I'm going to come to this thing and just music coming out of everywhere. And it's at this thing where the only way that the music is music economy in Canada is healthy is the festival system. But they get bigger and bigger and more bloated and more corporate sponsored.
Well, every one of those 1,000 bands had to pay to get there.
Yeah, exactly.
Did they have to pay to apply?
There's an application fee to apply. Right. It's not a lot.
So there's probably 10,000 or 100,000 bands that paid that.
And then 1,000 that get in. And they're playing to nobody.
Yeah, because there's 1,000 bands playing.
Because there's 1,000 bands. And everybody just wants to go see the Jesus and Mary Chain play Psycho Candy in its entirety. They're not going to be north of Bloor checking out a guy whose first show. And I remember him telling me this, which blew my mind at the time. It's like, they are only giving me a half an hour set. My set's an hour and a half. And it's like, whoa, like you have no business being here. It's just
thousands of dollars to play for a half hour to an empty room.
To a completely empty room. Yeah. I don't know that.
I mean, I guess you can say I played North by Northeast after that.
So
I'm sorry, you could say.
On your resume, I played Canadian Music Week.
Is North by Northeast the same kind of thing?
The difference between North by Northeast and Canadian Music Week, North by Northeast is taking a lot of money from big corporations now.
Yeah.
And none of that, zero of that dollars is filtering down to the local bands who kind of prop it up by support and playing out all these bills and everything else.
Do they take money from the artists in the same way that you're saying Canadian Music
Week
does?
So you have to apply for it.
Yeah.
But you don't get paid. You get paid in a wristband.
You get to go see other bands.
You get to go see other bands.
Uh-huh.
Which seems good. But it's because of the system where there's so many bands trying to knock it at the door that they can get away with it. And this is the system at most big festivals is we're going to pay you in wristbands.
Yeah.
And so I'm giving you my credibility to play Budweiser presents the House of Music at the Horseshoe Tavern to nobody versus playing a week later at the Horseshoe Tavern and getting money? Like, what am I getting out of that outside of maybe a resume fodder or my name in 3-point font on a poster? Like, it's not a fair exchange. And if, again, music is a commodity whose value is zero, maybe now, then I get to choose maybe on what I exchange that for. So I get to exchange my name for causes that I support or things that I believe in versus playing a Fleshlight sponsored showcase.
Does that exist?
Yeah, well, it's the Fleshlight comedy showcase.
Okay.
I mean, that's another whole world that's maybe more depressing than music.
Yeah. We'll go there too. So what would you do if you're starting all over again? Because all of this stuff that is made it so difficult to sell albums has also made it so you can reach audiences all over the world. You can connect with fans in interesting ways. You can get funded directly by your fans.
Sure.
Is that the kind of band you would build if you were starting from the ground up? And if you were like 16?
I think it's more where I'm going again now, which is there was a time where...
Where are you going again now? Your label's done, but you're...
I work at a communications firm.
Okay.
So like all media people...
You got a day job.
We got a day job, right? A really good day job, which I'm very happy. It's never been easy to be
a musician. There's no system that makes it easy, right? No,
you're right. And there's no shortcuts to it.
Like, all this just seems like horseshit, like wasting time with grant applications and all these. Like, doesn't it seem like if you play music and you develop an audience and you build a relationship with them, there's probably some way to make that viable.
Yeah, or maybe not.
Yeah.
And maybe it doesn't matter anymore. I have a day job. As my bandmate puts it, he works in an advertising agency. I have an unethical job so I can make ethical decisions. And it's kind of this thing where, you know, we're in a band. I'm in my mid-30s now. Yeah. My new band got signed to a very well-respected punk label. And we have records coming out and it's like things are good. Maybe the difference is that other side doesn't actually exist.
Well,
unless you win the lottery and you get that breakthrough moment where the chance of that happening, especially for me now in my mid-30s, minuscule.
Yeah, but you know what? It's just, the whole thing was based on, you know, we still have this idea that like, oh, you haven't made it until it's your full-time job.
Correct.
What if you do this and it's your love and your passion on your weekends and you go on tour once a year and at night and you love it and it works and it's viable because you're selling enough stuff and you're connecting with people enough and they're funding you enough to keep it going.
Yeah.
And you get to do it not for like the minute when you're the flavor of the month, but indefinitely because you love to do it. And that I think applies to so many creative pursuits.
Right. I think since I've switched my brain back to that exact thing, I'm so much happier.
Yeah.
I'm way less cynical. I go to shows again and I'm not just completely jaded and cynical, which I was at a certain point when I was, we're playing festivals and I'm just drowning in live music. And it's just like everybody's chasing the same thing that maybe doesn't even exist anymore.
Yeah.
Even for the bands that like made it, like they, you know, creatively they fall off after a while, most of them. And then it's like, do a few people in the band legitimize themselves and become producers or become,
sure,
I don't know, bureaucrats at Factor or something like that. Right. Like that, like that's how you get permanence in the industry.
Well, the only way to make music in the music industry is by not playing music.
To make money in the music industry?
The only way you can make a living.
Yeah.
Playing in a band is the worst thing you can do. Working at a label or a studio or something reliable, you can make a living. And I know people that do and are very, very happy.
Yeah.
It's just it's a different world, you know, and that's okay.
Yeah.
I definitely think that artists should be able to make a living. And in a world where that's becoming more and more impossible as the music as a commodity reaches zero, I don't want to take that away from anybody. I don't want people to be left out. I want people to be able to play music who are good musicians and earn a living. But at what point do we look and go, okay, you've had your turn, or what are some other ways we could use this money by, let's say, funding studios across the country and the territories so that bands can actually go in and they're not, it's not, we're going to give you $1,500, but we're going to give you time to develop.
That I could get behind. Like, if we are going to put government money into developing the arts, mm-hmm, creating access to recording space, creating access to music instruction, creating access points where people could express themselves that way, right, and learn about music, who wouldn't just absolutely, right, cheer for something like
the
that?
The age of physical media is over.
Yeah.
Let's build a system where—
Concert venues.
Let's do venues where we rebuild the infrastructure for touring musicians, which has been decimated.
Yeah.
For me, as someone who's traveled coast to coast countless times in a van, every year it's harder.
Yeah.
Because popular music doesn't have the same cachet as it once did. And especially when it's this world of super popularity or nothing.
Yeah.
You know, we only want the hits because there's just 1,000 bands coming to town. And I have no way. I tried to that year listen to every single band playing Canadian Music Week, and I only made it halfway through the list. So maybe let's build the infrastructure and let's change what merit and success means.
Yeah.
And we could do that because the amount of money sitting on the table here right now would absolutely support that system.
Thanks very much.
Yeah, appreciate it.
That was your Canada Land Show. I hope you enjoyed it. You can always email me at jesse@canadalandshow.com. I read them all. I respond when I can. I am on Twitter at Jesse Brown. The website is canadalandshow.com. And the crowdfunding site is patreon.com/CanadaLand. The next episode of Canada Land Commons will be up on Tuesday, and Canada Land Shortcuts will be up on Thursday. I make this show with Katie Jensen. If you like this show, support it.
Hey, I need you to pay close attention to this message. It is not an ad. This is about Canada Land, and this is about you. You need to know that the news crisis is about to get a lot worse. You've heard about the layoffs. We're about to have news closures, and it's very likely that we're going to be seeing the defunding of the CBC. Where are you going to get your information from? What can you do about this? You can support Canada Land. We need you to. And so for this month and this month only, you can become a Canada Land supporter and get everything our supporters get for just $2 a month. That is an almost 80% discount. The clock is ticking on this. It disappears at the end of the month, and then we will not offer it. We need your support. We need to keep news coverage alive in Canada. Go right now to canadaland.com/join. And thank you.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.